From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Everybody, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in a night. I'm your host, the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my other wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape-wearing and flannel-rocking producer, my friend, my brother, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. And I'm just getting a glimpse of me on the camera now here.
You look great.
The flannel. Thank you, Bob. But the flannel with the cape, it actually looks pretty cool. I didn't know how it was going to work.
The Midwest vampire.
Midwestern vampire.
The Midwestern vampire.
I am a scarecrow. I think
that's the new persona for you.
Yes. They call it the Midwestern chic, I believe is what they call it.
I believe so, yes. Count, it's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too,
We're
Bob.
Officially into the spooky season.
The veil is thinning.
We missed last week because it was a certain person's birthday.
It was your birthday.
It was my birthday, yes.
And on behalf of everybody that works on the staff at Bob After Dark.
So you got you, you got Tiff, you got my mom.
Yeah.
Queen of the Night, sorry, I named her. Yeah. And then you got the my cats.
Your cats. And, you know, for the fan base as well, I guess, which is millions of millions. But here's the thing, Bob. They have a very happy belated birthday, I guess you could say.
Thank you very much.
What'd you do?
I had a very calm and chill birthday. Yeah. I spent it probably as most people would. I wandered through a cemetery.
That's nice.
Yeah. It was, I woke up, took myself to a very nice breakfast.
Very nice.
And then I decided I wanted to keep my morality at check. Mortality, my sub, my bad. Wanted to keep my mortality at check and realize where the ever march ends keeps ending to. And I decided to go celebrate my birthday by wishing to folks that probably people may have forgotten their birthday over the years. I figured I'd drop it and give them a little company. So
nice.
As per the Bob tradition, when he wanders through a cemetery, I always try to clean up the headstones as best as I can, a little foot and kicking dirt off and stuff like that. It's just a nice way to really ground yourself. And then I had a really good dinner. And it was very calm, very peaceful.
Nice.
And then I got to enjoy my birthday this past Saturday. I went to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Symphonic Orchestra. They played Ghostbusters.
Did you go there?
I did. I got it.
Nice.
It was a nice little gift to go. Hung out with the Windy City Ghostbusters for the night. And it was cool because it was unexpected. I was going. I've been, you guys might be wondering why I've been kind of on the lack of stuff going on this month, live appearances. We're really close to TV stuff and really busy with TV stuff, like my personal stuff. So I've been just kind of waiting for the day when I need to jump and run. So just been really kind of sticking at local and things where I can like easy check in and out of.
Of course.
Yeah, but you on the other hand, I know have been busy.
Well,
I want to start by saying I haven't seen you.
Yeah.
But I hear a certain producer of mine is now Mr. Pierogi.
Oh, Bob. Yes.
Yes.
I am Mr. Pierogi. Count Pierogi.
Count Pierogi. Oh, my. Listen. Listen.
Crossover?
I. Do you have the outfit already?
No.
Okay.
No.
I was like, if we could get a Count Pierogi like photo shoot in, I will. If there's a photographer listening out there that wants to do that photo shoot on a very shoestring budget, please.
It could be. It might be a whole thing of with once it gets dark at Pierogi Fest, Mr. Count Pierogi comes out. But yeah, Bob, I am the new Mr. Pierogi of the
Wide Pierogi. Congratulations!
Thank you. I appreciate
that. Great.
It's a big honor, a privilege, and I'm thrilled to do it. You know, costume has to be made now, and it's just been an exciting couple of weeks here. Speaking of Whiting, Indiana, which Pierogi Fest does take place in Whiting.
My hometown.
I guess I could give you my weekend recap here. I went to one of the major second largest event of the year, Wickedly Whiting. I did
done it a couple of times.
Yeah, we've done it a couple of times, and it's good to see it happening each and every year. It's got to make you feel a little proud, too. To see a Halloween fest in your hometown.
Yes, and it's grown. Like, I've seen pictures. It looks
amazing.
Oh,
it's fantastic.
It's great.
Yeah. Oh, we got a phone call, too.
Already?
Yeah.
I have a going to tap into my ye old psychic brain here and say it's going to be John.
I don't know.
Take it live.
Take it live.
Take it live. Are they live?
Caller, hey,
call you on the air.
Hey, Bob, don't forget to include me in that list with those cats and everything behind Bob
After Dark. You know, John, you aren't an unofficial member of the Bob After Dark staff. You are like my unofficial co-host these days.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, I really enjoy your show. And you know what? Very happy birthday to you. Congratulations to Mr. Pierogi.
Yes.
And you know what I did? I did celebrate your birthday in a sense. I went to Center Lounge, throw it out there like I usually do every Friday.
Hello, Aunt Karen. Yes.
Well, we talked to Karen. Yeah, when I go there and got to know the staff there too, talking about staff. And after I had my delicious meal, I went to the bar and talked to Karen a little bit. And I said, hey, give me a shot of that Polish Jesienówka you got there.
Oh, my goodness. Is that the blackberry brandy?
Yep, on behalf of Bob's birthday and Mr. Pierogi, Mr. Pierogi there. And
yeah.
It, you know, I didn't down it, but I enjoyed a few sips of it and finished it off. And so I did celebrate your birthday and the fact that Mr. Pierogi is new on the scene. So I didn't forget you guys.
Well, thank you. How about that, Bob?
Oh, that's so sweet of you, John. Thanks for remembering my birthday. And it's
you have many, many years, and stole a lot to you, and I'll listen to your show. Take care.
John, we always appreciate you calling. And John is an unofficial staff member at Bob After Dark. If you're my producer, that is like my unofficial. Do we have another caller?
No, I'm just
geez, we had two. Guys, you know, you can call into the show. We have a hotline. It's 219
Hot
219-845-1100. I know most of our fans probably come from podcast land, so obviously you don't want to call the studio when I'm not live.
They might call and I might pick up, but
you
it
can
won't
call
be
yeah, you,
Bob After Dark.
You'll be calling the region rush hour and
we'll
other
be talking,
that weird Tony Panic guy will be like, "What do you want?"
Talking some local stuff. But
exactly, yeah. But no, it's you guys call in 219-845-1100. Let me know what's on your brains.
And I want to give a shout. You mentioned your mom there as a part of the crew. And I want to thank her. I already ate the cookies.
Oh, they were s'mores cookies.
They were very good cookies. Yeah. And she packed a donut. Fantastic. So thank your mom for that. Where did she get the cookies from?
I don't know.
The cookies were really good.
I want to say they might be Girl Scout cookies.
They were nice. They were nice.
But I will tell you, those donuts, unofficial shout out to a specific orchard in Northwest Indiana, you could probably draw conclusions.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mention names because they don't sponsor the show, but you could. Reach out. I'll take the sponsorship.
And I hope I should have walked in and gave you that gift right there.
You know what? I'm going to save this. I got a nice gift here wrapped in fun package. The Bob After Dark Facebook Live show, the Bob After Dark Unplugged.
Yeah, go ahead.
After the show, you guys can watch me open my presents.
A teaser.
Yeah, thank you very much, Count Panic. It's
no
very
problem.
Sweet.
No
Thanks
problem.
For not forgetting. I always appreciate it.
No,
you.
Well, last week I had it. I was like, well, wait a second. I'm not going to see him. So I made sure to have it in my car at all times because nothing worse. I believe, what was that one thing your Christmas gift. I think I sat on it for like 3 months before I gave it to you.
Oh, yeah. That one we couldn't open live.
Wow. Yeah, maybe you're right about that. Yeah. This one's safe for it.
This one's definitely okay. That's good to hear. You know, it's good to be back. It's good to be back in the studio. We are not taking another break for the rest of the month. This is back to back to back. In fact, I'm going to be cranking out extra content through the month because it's October. It's kind of important. We're going to be celebrating our anniversary next week.
That's right. We did start in October.
We did. Yeah. Next week will be 3 years. Technically 19? Four, but I don't count 2020
really?
By any means. Yeah. Four long years.
Yeah, there would have been 4 years.
But I don't. Pandemic, I wasn't here.
Sure.
I missed like 9 months of work.
Fair.
So, I mean, I wasn't here. So I don't really count 2020. So this is like third year being here.
Three and three quarters. Yeah.
Exactly. Then we missed a lot of this year because of this, that, and other.
Yeah.
We're just going to say 3 years.
Sure.
We're going to say 3 years of the show this year. And we've come a long way. I'll save the sappy speech for next week. I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, counting the couple of years we've been doing this here, I have to say, I have something we have to talk about.
What's that?
What the show's about.
What is it about?
This is your first time listening in podcast land or maybe watching on Jed TV or listening in on the radio waves. Bob After Dark is your weekly-ish, and I say ish very capital letters these days, underline italicized. Weekly-ish paranormal shows. This is every week we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, bumps in the night, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite pierogi filling.
You know what, Bob? People have been asking me about that lately.
I figured it was an important question to ask.
And I've always been the standard. I think this is everybody. A lot of people, probably predominantly everybody's favorite, is potato. I like a good potato pierogi. Now, here's the thing: you put cheese in there as well, which is also very nice.
Cheddar or the sweet?
I'm gonna do a hot take. I think cheddar.
No, that's what I do.
Oh, they do cheddar.
Listen, as far as the pierogi fillings are concerned, right? My father, rest his soul, missed you, Dad. As far as his pierogi flavors were concerned, he was a traditionalist through and through.
Yeah.
Kraut, cabbage, meat, potato, some sweet cheese, very little of that.
Where's the prune?
Don't put fruit. To him, that's blasphemy. Now, however, Dad enjoyed prune in like the punchki, but
yeah,
that's
not in the pierogi. No.
Keep the pierogi the standard flavors. These days, people will put whatever they want in them.
You could go crazy with
it's
buffalo chicken.
No, absolutely not. My poor father.
No. Yeah, you don't want to listen. Some things are should be left alone, and pierogi is one of those. Potato, cheese, what have you.
Your father's probably shaking his fist at the radio.
Buffalo chicken.
Buffalo, he just choked on that brandy. All right, so we usually divide the show up into two parts. It's one of the first parts where we talk about the weird, spooky news of the week. That is where you, the fans, submit to me news articles that are weird, strange, unusual, and the border, anything like where science is borderline doing things that are like in science fiction or cryptid sightings, ghost sightings, or just general weird news. And then the second half of the show is the lore of the week. That's the meat and potatoes.
Potatoes.
Which I don't eat the meat. I eat the potatoes. That's your job to eat the meat. So it's the meat and potatoes of the show. Count Panic throughout the episode is not prepped at all for the show. So get the hot takes, if you will, from Count Panic as he's prepared to dive in here.
And I'm going to do my best.
We appreciate it.
I always do.
Oh, I got to ask.
Yeah.
This is an unscripted question. I don't have this in my notes, but I have to ask. If there is like three things you've retained over the years that we've been doing this, if there's three stories that stand out to you or three things I've taught you, what are the three things?
I know how stories. There's a lot, plenty of stories.
Sure.
Well, you got the walking pants.
Yes.
What are they called?
The Snitch Walker.
The Snitch Walker.
The Fresno Night Crawl. I got, if Displays is listening, they
Yule Cat, of course. You got to mention Yule Cat in there. And also the gourd,
the man-eating gourd. Look at you.
Well, how about that? And I can go on. Johnny Appleseed and everything.
Oh, thanks. That's a teacup.
You did an episode on Johnny Appleseed.
I did it. That's an old episode that I hope nobody ever digs up.
There's got to be a best.
I woke up, like, I'm like, you know what? We should do a Johnny Appleseed episode. Oh, my God. All right.
Oh, so this is the season for the gourd-eating pumpkin, I think.
This is the season for the Johnny
Appleseed. Or gourd-eating. What's it called? The gourd-eating.
The man-eating gourd.
The man-eating gourd.
The man-eating gourd. And then there was a double-part episode where we talked about the West Virginia vegetable man.
Yes.
That's exactly a shout-out to a previous episode. I think it's just from a few back, so go listen to that. But let's dive right into the weird spooky news of the week. And our first story comes to us from, can you guess?
I'm going to guess our good friend.
Our good pal, Tim Benall, Coast to Coast AM. I just want to start off by saying, according to this article, I'm going to say something very controversial.
You are?
But it's not my take. Huh. It's the article's take.
Okay.
Sasquatch isn't real.
Whoa, Bob. I hope my mom's not listening right now.
Wildlife officials in Pennsylvania say that a series of official-looking Bigfoot warning signs that appeared throughout the state's parks this summer are actually fake, and that, in fact, the famed cryptid does not actually exist at all. According to a local media report, the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, this DCNR, were forced to issue the strangest statement in a response to a prankster who has spent the past several weeks plastering various wooded locations with faux bulletin bearing the department's letterhead. Now, in its announcements indicated that due to an encounter in the area of a creature resembling Bigfoot, they were advising park visitors to exercise caution during their stay to avoid Sasquatch if they see it. After what one assumes were a number of inquiries concerning the weird word weird word of warning. A spokesperson from the DCNR finally acknowledged the Curious campaign this week, stressing that signs were not the work of the department. Wesley Robertson laminated that we have seen them at the parks for months, and they are removed when they are reported or found by staff because they are not authorized. Mm. No doubt fed up with the effort that has been put forth by the prankster. The spokesperson went on seemingly take on ire on the poor Sasquatch, declaring that Bigfoot isn't real, which may be the oddest official statement to come out of a government agency in quite some time. Now I'm going to pass it to you for your panic state.
Yeah.
But I, real quick, and this is, I want you to simmer on this. I want you to understand that the DCNR is a federal, like,
yes,
federal organization. It's not like, you know, park rangers are just some people that they hire. No, these are like federal officers and like federal employees.
Yeah.
So what they say is technically a government statement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to pass it on to you, Count Panic. Right. Hashtag panic state.
Well, they said there's no way the Bigfoot Sasquatch could be possible. But wouldn't that be something you would a government entity would try to say to you to throw you off your tracks? I mean, they're saying this to kind of saying, well, hey, everybody, it's not real. Back away now. But realistically, they probably have items at hand where it's like, okay, we can't get this out to the public. Just tell them there's no case here. I think they're lying to us, Bob. Hope we don't get shut down for this, but I think they're lying to us.
Put on the tinfoil hats, boys and ghouls. I don't know. I get the idea of the signs. It's kind of a very well elaborate prank. Mm. I obviously, if it wasn't a prank, they probably would be honest and be like, oh, yeah, no, that's we did that.
Interesting.
Maybe, I mean, you could cover it up as like, oh, this was a Halloween decoration idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
think they're lying to us.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
If I say the word that the if I say the sentence, guys, by the way, I'm quoting this, that the government is lying to us about like the existence of paranormal entities or supernatural
UFOs,
occurrences,
right?
Or whatever. If I say the fact that the government's lying to us, then I become a conspiracy theory show, which I am not. I'm not a conspiracy theory show. I never have been, and I never will be. We did a Bob Lazar episode once that was really good, but I don't do the government conspiracy things. Let those people have those episodes. I'm not that good.
Of course.
But I will say, with that being said, it is, I will say this. If the existence of Sasquatch is real, my assumption is that the government is very much aware that it is real, and they just never made it public. That's all I really got to say on the topic. I mean, it's really hard to think that like these things can't be found, even though we could pretty much find anything. I mean, obviously, there's arguments to say that Sasquatch is like an interdimensional traveler and stuff, but that's a whole nother episode by itself. I don't know. I truly believe that the truth is out there.
Yeah.
And I want to believe, but I don't know. I don't have a clear answer there. I think it's interesting that someone put up these signs, though. I would have cackled.
Yeah.
I would have taken a picture.
Well, again, I don't want to make sure. I want to make sure we do stay clear of the whole getting dinged for being a
conspiracy show. Yeah. Jen's going to wake up tomorrow on the morning show. Why do you got a conspiracy theory show on the late night?
There's a lot of conspiracies during the day here as well. I feel like. So it's nothing out of bounds.
Yeah,
for us.
Right.
But, you know, the whole thing with Area 51, I mean, who could say the same thing can't be done with a Bigfoot? That's all I'm saying, Bob. That's all I'm saying.
Are you saying we should storm the woods?
They can't stop us all.
You can't stop us all camp in the woods.
Yes.
But make sure you don't trash it and leave nothing behind but footprints.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll be the next raid. Everybody comes on the Bob After Dark camping trip.
We would look at
I don't camp. I will catch you guys. I'm out at night. I'm going to go back to my hotel, but I will meet you guys during the day and do whatever Bob After Dark.
You're into glamping.
What's that?
Glamping. That's
glamping.
Where you,
if I had a nice RV, probably would, but I no tent for Bob. I'm good.
Well, and one more point about Bigfoot here. We did at one point, a couple years back, did a search here
in
Indiana.
Because there is the story of
the
Hessville Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But we did go hunting for it. And
back in the 70s, there was a Bigfoot walk around Hessville. And to this day, nobody knows where it went.
Same one where this one in Pennsylvania went, apparently. But just my last point on this, once again, the DCNR has gone on record, which means it's a federal, like, phrase saying that Bigfoot isn't real.
Yeah. Well, yep. There we have it. We'll take it. We'll take their word for it.
All right. Let's break up the Tim and all stories. Our next one comes to us from Oddity Central. This one is a true crime story because apparently true crime is very popular right now.
It is.
I'm not going to mention his name because we're not a true crime show. There's certain things where like conspiracy and the true crime podcasts, we exist in the same bowling league. But as I always say, we bowl on separate teams, but we're on the same league, right? But I found this a very interesting story. It's not true crime. I guess it's true crime, but it's fascinating, all right? And it is, the story comes to us from Oddity Central, and it is the Gresham Lumberjack, Oregon's mysterious tree serial killer. Authorities in Gresham, a suburb of Portland, Oregon, are trying to catch the infamous Gresham Lumberjack, a person who is suspected to have cut down 700 trees in the area with no apparent reason. A special task force...
Well, why not?
A special task force put together by... Sorry. Put together by Gresham Police and the Parks and Recreations have been scouring thousands of photos of forest in Gresham, looking for clues that could help them identify and finally catch the Gresham Lumberjack. The elusive tree serial killer has been felling trees for over a year now, and it seems to be getting bolder. Unfortunately, so far, all they know is that the culprit seems to prefer trees along a segment of trail between the 7th Street Bridge and Towel Avenue and cutting them down with a handsaw or a bow saw. We have found a lot of blades that have pierced actual wood itself and saw the individual just has more blades on hand and just keeps cutting, Joe Walsh, the Gresham and PR manager, said. A lot of times, a bow saw can get through trees in about 5 to 10 minutes. It's pretty quick. These blades are sharp. This is somebody that comes in quick, but the individuals also spend hours in the field cutting these trees down. So this person's cutting down trees very fast, very fast. Whereas a group of people could take hours, this person's just cutting through them in 5-10 minutes. Mm-hmm. City crews first noticed the handiwork of the Gresham Lumberjack back in August of 2021, but they have yet to catch him or her in an act or at least get any leads on their identity. Over the past 13 months, the tree serial killer is estimated to have cut down 500 to 750 healthy trees, leaving in otherwise healthy trunks right where they fell. Gresham authorities have set up hidden cameras along the area that the mysterious lumberjack seems to prefer, but so far they have nothing to identify them. Stranger still is the fact that the culprit doesn't seem to have any motive. No wood has been taken, and the trees seem to be cut at random. Apart from the hundreds of destroyed trees, the Gresham Lumberjack is also responsible for destroying an untold number of shrubs and bushes, which equates to hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages. And despite the spotlight being on them in the media, the mysterious criminal appears to be getting bolder, cutting down bigger and healthier trees. I think it's horrible, one local man said. People are cutting down live, healthy trees, and we're trying to plant trees here to stop erosion. And unfortunately, somebody is just doing it for the fun, and it is terrible. Hashtag panic steak.
Well, that's the thing, Bob. They said for no apparent reason, which was kind of strange. But the what they're doing in this amount of time, it's... Unhuman.
And this is where where the Bob After Dark line gets drawn, because here we are in Pennsylvania with the first story saying Sasquatch isn't real, and here we are in Oregon where we're cutting down trees at lightning fast speeds.
So it's got to be.
And they can't catch the culprit.
Wait,
Sasquatch migrated from Pennsylvania to Portland. You're welcome. That's a
that's
a hot take.
Did you just come up with the now?
That's a Bob After Dark exclusive.
Yeah, but did you just draw the lines there together just now, or were you thinking about that all day?
Well, God, I've been thinking about
You've been thinking about it?
Killing the illusion.
Well, that's amazing, though, because
let me show you my my hypothetical board with the red string, and I'm tying thumbtacks around it.
That is interesting, Bob.
You're cutting down a tree in 5 to 10 minutes that some people take hours to do.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's unhuman.
No, it's strange, which is why I talked about it. You can't catch this person that's chopping down 700 trees. That's a lot of trees. How have you not caught this person yet? One. All right, you follow me so
I follow
far?
You.
You have not even an evidence, a photo, or anything to tell me who's cutting down these trees.
Exactly.
The newspapers got involved to name this thing. Mm-hmm. Like Gresham Lumberjack, which, by the way, if somebody makes like a patch or something that says like who's the Gresham Lumberjack, let me know. I will rock that thing with pride.
Yes.
I'm not saying what they're doing is correct, because no, you shouldn't be chopping down trees unless you like need firewood or need shelter or something, right? Or the tree is diseased. There's reasons for that. But if it's, I don't know, it's very strange. Unless there's like a corporate conspiracy, I guess, where they're trying to cut down trees in that one area to build something. But then I sound like a 90s family movie.
Wow.
Where like Sasquatch is going to like chain himself to a tree, and that's how we discover that he's real.
They might have made that movie. I'm not sure.
Making that up as I go.
Yeah. I think there's a plot for Harry and the Hendersons, wasn't it? I don't know.
Was that a conservation movie? Or
oh,
was,
I
was just like, I've never, I, fun fact, I don't think I've ever seen Harry and the Hendersons.
I remember when I was a kid.
I've never seen it. I might have. I don't remember.
Probably made a couple of it. But Bob, you might be right here. I mean, this is, you got to chalk this up to something supernatural, something cryptid, and I think Bigfoot is just your guy.
We have fans in Portland. I know that for a fact because I see the geographic locations of where you're listening. I am watching, by the way. Portland people, reach out to me. I'm curious to hear what your take is. And is this common? Have you guys ever had these weird problems before? What's going on in Portland, Oregon, folks? All right, let's talk about our last news story of the evening, which is eyebrows raised after 433 people win lottery game in Philippines.
What?
433 people win same lottery game. That's a lot, all right? Tim Binal writes this from Coast to Coast. Authorities in the Philippines are calling for an investigation after a staggering 433 people all somehow managed to pick the winning numbers on the same lottery game. The weird turn of events reportedly occurred this past Saturday when the Philippines Charity Sweepstakes Office, the PCSO, held their grand lotto with an expected prize amount of $4 million. Stunningly, when the winning numbers of 9, 18, 27, 36, 45, and 54 were drawn, it was determined that they were a whopping 433 people who had each number correctly chosen them. As one might imagine, the shocking result raised suspicions throughout the Philippines that the game was not on the level. As explained on Twitter by mathematician Dr. Guido David, the odds of 433 people all picking the same winning nine numbers is jaw-dropping. One out of one followed by 1,224 zeros. So whatever that number is. That seemingly impossible outcome has led some officials in the Philippines to determine a probe into Saturday's lottery game, with one politician dubbed strange and unusual. Mm-hmm. For their part, the PCSO insists that the entire process surrounding the drawing was overseen by various observers who can attest that there were no shenanigans involved, and it issued a statement which read in part, Lottery is a game of choice. Nothing is definite, and it is uncontrollable. As for the 433 winners, they're going to be taking home a whopping $9,000 from the $4 million prize, which still isn't nothing to shake a stick at.
No.
Hashtag panic stake.
Well, Bob, this sounds like something that might be supernatural as well. Are we sure that Bigfoot is not involved with this story, too? At some point in time.
The Bigfoot doing the lottery.
Yeah,
spinning the,
working
spinning
the numbers there.
What do you call
know.
It? No, you're not spinning balls. That's bingo. What's the what's
what lottery on TV?
Lottery, they used to ping pong balls too, but it's like air compressed.
It's air compressed, but yeah, if Bigfoot's involved with this, it could be a case too. They're all connected, these stories. That's just I just want to say, you think somebody rigged the system, right? You think somebody physically rigged the system, but what if it is just a coincidence?
Okay,
it could happen, I guess.
All right, In my brain, I'm trying to play the skeptic here, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, it's totally rigged. How do you put, even if it's what, four or five numbers that I said that's on there, right? 9, 18, 27, 36, which is also multiples of nine, by the way, which is, you know, kind of strange in and of itself. In order to draw those numbers in order, you would have to put the same number in the, like, tank.
Yeah.
And you'd have to call them through. I don't know. I don't see how it can be rigged. The planning for it to be rigged would be astronomical, and only for $9,000, I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, they all walk home with something at the end of the day. But I don't know. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe I'm looking too deep into this. Maybe it's just a coincidence.
I don't know. I'm going with it's definitely weird.
It's weird.
If it's not a coincidence, or it is a coincidence, I don't even know where to begin. There is definitely like some sort of apocalyptic like reason to madness. There is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I digress. Ready to take a quick break?
Yeah, sure.
You sounded unsure there.
Well, I didn't know if we wanted to do it for sure, but we could do it.
We can take a quick break.
Okay.
For live fans, stick around. We'll be right back. And to our podcast fans, stay tuned. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back.
Wow.
Wow. Was that your Owen Wilson impression?
Wow. That was warp speed.
How was your break?
Bob, I can't complain. It was pretty good.
What'd you do?
Bob, you're not going to believe it.
What was it?
I won the lottery.
How much did you win?
$9,000.
Jeez.
But I have to share it with a bunch of other people. That's $9,000. So each, at the end of the day, we get to take home 9,000 people won.
I'll see a buck.
We get a dollar each. So I won a dollar in the lottery.
I mean, you're going to go get a split of apple pie from McDonald's?
Is it still a dollar?
I'm sure it's not. Or a parfait. God, McDonald's parfait is pretty good, though.
Yeah, they were good.
Anyway, I digress.
What'd you do?
You know, what I did, I had downed my favorite flannel, and I have vowed that I'm going to Oregon to hunt down the Gresham Lumberjack.
You're going down there?
You're going up there? I'm going to Portland. I'm going to get to the bottom of this Lumberjack case.
Somebody's got to do it, Bob. And if it's not going to be you, then who can it be? It's got to be you.
It's got to be me. Yeah. I am totally the person to go hunt down this mysterious Phantom Lumberjack.
Set them straight.
Phantom Lumberjack. Mm-hmm. I like that. The case of the Phantom Lumberjack.
It could be a movie.
I think we're on to something, Count.
The Phantom Lumberjack.
Yes. You know, our last episode we did, let's do the most awkward transition in the entire universe. Let's look at transitioning to what our last episode was about. We talked about the Eagles Rave Ballroom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yep.
And it got me thinking, man, we got to come up with a theme for October. And I wanted to do, initially I had this idea for like comparing movies. It takes a lot more prep for that than like week, because usually for the show I get week to week, right? I don't work out a month of notes ahead of time. That's just not how that works. For something like that, Count and I are actually going to be on the same page for it. So we'll talk more about that. I'm going to theme our December around that. I think it'd be a lot of fun for us to do. But for October, it's just busy season. And I watch enough horror movies as it is, but I watch them in like fun. I don't want to research. So we'll do that for December. So this month we're doing, in honor of our anniversary and in honor of the spooky season, we're talking about haunted venues.
Haunted venues.
Haunted venues. Okay. Places that you could go see a show at. Not a movie theater, but a place where you can see a ghost and entertainment all at the same time.
Really?
So last week we talked about the Eagles Club in Milwaukee, and we talked about the different spirits that wander around there. That episode is out, by the way. You could go listen to wherever you listen to podcasts at. This week, we're going to be talking about a thing I learned on probably my favorite paranormal TV show of all time when I was a boy.
Okay.
And it's actually probably the inspiration behind Bob After Dark as a whole.
Okay.
Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, Unsolved Mysteries, yeah.
Unsolved Mysteries, you guys probably heard me talk about it on the show before, but I'll always bring it back for newer listeners. Unsolved Mysteries is what got me into the paranormal as a kid. I remember seeing like the Resurrection Mary episode and being like, oh, you know, I'm from Chicago, right? And
yeah,
you got a ghost here and it's on TV and Richard Crowe was, you know, talking about it on that episode. So you could skip the really scary, like reenacted true crime stuff or Robert Stack's voice and like the theme song, all that adds up. But once in a while, you would get like a ghost story or a cryptid story or a UFO sighting. And those were always like the most fascinating parts of Unsolved Mysteries. And in fact, I wish I could just go and edit out all the true crime stuff and just go watch the paranormal stuff like now. Because I catch myself when I do want to like watch it on streaming, I usually skim through the true crime stuff. I get that it was important for the time because they did solve a lot of cases that way. But I'm not in it for that. I'm watching the paranormal stuff. But there was something on there that that recalled in my brain as I was working for the theming for this month. And that is, have you ever heard of the Comedy Store?
Yeah. Where is that located at?
L.A.
L.A., yep. I heard
it's a comedy club.
Yeah.
That is supposedly very haunted.
Okay.
So a good place to start is the beginning. Okay. I'm going to be reading a lot from the Unsolved Mysteries Wiki where they talk about the show there.
Nice.
And there happened to be a very famous paranormal investigator who went there and did an episode there. Can you take a guess who did it?
I'm sure another good friend, right?
Yeah, good old pal of ours, Zach Bagans himself. Yeah, that. Zach was there.
Yeah,
you can watch that episode if that's your cup of tea.
Yeah.
Let's move
on.
Go
for it.
All right, let's talk about the history of the Comedy Store before we dive into the paranormal and whatnot. Comedy Store was opened in April 1972 by comedians Sammy Shore and Rudy DeLuca. The building was formerly home of Club Seaville in 1935 and later Cairo's in 1940 to 1957, a popular nightclub owned by William Wickerson and later Cairo's Le Disc, a rock and roll venue where the Birds were discovered in 1964.
How about that? Legendary.
And what you got to say, everything's got to turn. Yeah. When the venue was reopened as the Comedy Store in 1972, it included a 99, which is a very odd specific number, seat theater as a result of a divorce statement. Sammy Shore's ex-wife, Mitzi Shore, began operating the club in 1973, and she was able to buy the building in 1976. She immediately renovated and expanded the club to include 450-seat main room, which I think is way better than the 99. You got to get people in seats for the, for work, right?
Yeah.
In 1974, the comedy store hosted wedding receptions of newlyweds Liza Minnelli and Jack Haley Jr. I'm assuming you know who Liza Minnelli is.
Of course, yeah. Okay. Famous.
Yes, the comedy club signage was covered for the evening by signs reading Cairo's, denoting the venue's prior identity. The event was attended by dozens of Hollywood, people, including like Elizabeth Taylor, Sammy Davis Jr., Cher, and the list goes on. It was one of the first real big Hollywood weddings that was like, glitzy and glamorous. These days we take it for granted, but the Liza Minnelli wedding once upon a time ago was like the big deal, and it was at this comedy club. You can catch the comedy club, like I did say, is on Western Boulevard. In L.A., West Hollywood, I guess you can say. There has been a lot of comedians that come out of there because it's not only just a comedy club, but it's also a comedy school, just like you and I went to once upon a time ago.
Of course, yeah.
Alum of I.O.
Yeah, I.O. Theater.
And Second City
and
my band.
City too, yeah.
Second City and I.O. alums. This is just a place that you can go and harness your craft. Some of the most talented people came out of the comedy club and got their grinded their teeth there. Some names include Jay Leno, Louis Anderson, Tim Allen, Roseanne Barr, Dennis Miller, and Jim Carrey.
A lot of famous people walking through those doors.
Yeah, also, finally, George Carlin.
Uh-huh.
But the list goes on, Norm MacDonald, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So those are just some of the names. If you can imagine the comedy club, what it is, it's a super amazing, cool-looking comedy club, and there's even a docuseries about the Comedy Store that's you can watch on Showtime that I watched in preparation for this, which was really cool. I watched bits and pieces. So go check out a little bit about the Comedy Store, but I'm sure you're tired of hearing about the history of things. You ready to talk about the paranormal aspect.
Well, Bob, you're mentioning all these great comedians, some that may have passed. I don't know if there's a connection here, but I'm interested.
All right, so let's dive in. Yeah. Excuse me. You know, over the decades, the played host to a lot of legendary comedians that didn't learn there, but performed. As I was mentioning before, we had Richard Pryor and Robin Williams, Chevy Chase, and Jerry Seinfeld. And over the years, all these comedians were able to deliver really good jokes, and it's like a place to be. If you're a comedian and you're moving your way up, you're going to stop through the Comedy Store. However, according to many employees, past and present, the club's hallowed halls are actually haunted. Author Lori Jacobson, who once worked there as a waitress, collected the stories for a book about ghosts in Hollywood titled Hollywood Haunted. She says the club is haunted from basement to the rafters. When she was working there, the waitress would have to set up the main showroom by putting tablecloths and ashtrays on every table. They would do this for about an hour before the customers were due to arrive. Lori says that on occasions, the waitresses would set up the room, leave for a moment, come back, and find that everything was put back. The tablecloths were refolded and stacked. The ashtrays would be stacked. Lori said that she and the other waitresses knew exactly what they were dealing with there, and that they knew that what was happening in those rooms. The tables were being set and unset and were being done by not goblins, but ghosts. Comedian Joey Gaynor has also had experiences in the club. He says what happened was not a figment of his imagination. He was neither drunk nor high. He did not get hit in the head with anything. He said it's easy to know once you see something unexplained, you believe it. When he was first starting off as a comedian, he worked as a doorman at the club most nights. He was the last one to leave the building, typically throughout it, doing a walkthrough to make sure the doors were locked, or so he thought. About 3 a.m. one morning, Joey was alone in the club and began locking up. He went into the showroom and grabbed his coat. As he was walking to leave, he noticed two lit candles on a table. He blew them out and started walking towards the exit. When he turned just a few seconds later, he noticed that the candles were lit again. He went back to the table, blew them out again. He figured they were just still lit maybe a little bit when he blew them out, and after a second they reactivated. As he started walking down the stairs towards the exit, he felt the air just kind of get really cold, a microclimate, if you will. He turned around, and there the candles were lit once again, and he said, "Okay, stay lit, goodbye," and he left. He did not want to hang around there and find out why this was happening. And that's what happened, Joey. You should have stuck around and seen what was going on there. It seems that the club's spirits just like to play games with Joey. On another night, he went to shut off the lights in the building, which were located behind the stage. About 5 seconds later, he returned to the main showroom and found a bunch of chairs piled up on top of each other in the middle of an aisle. He never heard anyone come in, nor did he hear chairs moving. He does not believe that someone could have come in and done that during the five-second period he was away. Like Joey, comedian Blake Clark served as a tour of duty as the club's doorman. He says that he, too, was a target for the club's disembodied pranksters. Prior to working there, he did not believe in ghosts or any sort of paranormal manifestation. One night, however, he came into the main showroom to lock it up when he heard a noise. He looked over to the stage and saw a bar stool being spun around and dragged about 20 feet. He says it was clearly not an earthquake, wind, or a person that caused the stool to move. He said it was, well, supernatural, as of yet, unexplained force. Another night, Blake was getting ready to leave when he heard someone banging on the piano keys in the belly room. He rushed upstairs thinking someone was locked in. As soon as he unlocked the door, the noise stopped. Once he was inside, it was clear that no one was in the building, just him. As he turned to leave, he heard it again. The piano keys were playing. He looked at the piano, but no one was there. Blake claims that he also witnessed one of Joey's misadventures with the supernatural. One night, the two were working in the main stage area when Joey mentioned how a lot of strange stuff was going on that week. Blake told him to quit antagonizing him, and Joey responded with, "Hey, come on now, cut it out. Come on, go show yourself. Come on, where are you?" And just a moment later, an ashtray lifted up from a nearby table, floated several feet in the air, and was flung at Joey. Joey ducked, and the ashtray stuck at the wall behind him and shattered. Joey thought Blake threw the ashtray at him, but Blake told him that it came from another part of the room. He then realized that a ghost was the one who threw it at him. It seems the ghosts like to watch the shows and give opinions about them. One night, comedian Sam Kinison was performing on stage in the original showroom while Blake was closing up the main one. Blake says that Sam's routine continued. He heard voices in the room he was in. The voices got louder and louder and started chanting angrily, "It's him. It's him. It's him." The ghost then tried to dissuade Sam from performing. They were messing with the lights and it actually interfered with the sound system. When Sam challenged the ghosts to show themselves, all the lights went out, Ironically, Sam, who passed away in 1992, is now rumored to be one of the ghosts that haunt the club. Michael Becker, vice president of the Comedy Store and handler of their business affairs, says that always will be a skeptic of ghost stories because they come from comedians. It took him less than 5 minutes to turn into a believer. He says that the phantom he saw dropped by in broad daylight in the middle of a very important call, no less. As Michael was standing outside his office, he saw someone wearing what looked like a 1940s tweed jacket walk by him. And let me say, I'm a little jealous of the 1940s tweed jacket. And the person walked right by him and into his office. He and his coworker, who were sitting across from him, went into the office. Lo and behold, nobody was there other than the other coworker, who was now using Michael's phone. Surprisingly, that coworker did not see anyone walk in, and Michael says something, not a person, walked into his office on that fateful day. That something has been prowling the premise for decades, or so they say. Long before the club moved in, it was home to the nightclub, as I was talking about earlier, Cairo's. We talked a little bit about Cairo's earlier. It was a really popular, like, swanky, flashy playground for movie stars during the 40s and 50s. You would see people like Lucille Ball kind of hanging out there, and Bette Davis, etc. Lawyer says Cairo is the most popular nightclub in over Hollywood during the time, and says the club was very popular. And during that time, while it was popular, let's just say some members of organized crime might have been involved with moving some money in and out of the club, but we won't go in past that. Mickey Cohen, the most notorious of the Cairo's gangland regulars, he was known to conduct sinister business there, such as gambling and bootlegging. It had been a long said rumor that a few unfortunate souls who had run-ins with Cohen ended up as ghosts at Cairo's. He apparently carried out several murders in his second floor office, dealing with what he would say problem people. And they would end up in the basement. There were rumors that the bodies that were buried in the basement as well. Allegedly, at one point, there was also an abortion clinic in the basement. One woman, the girlfriend of a mobster, reportedly died during an abortion gone wrong. Her voice can still be heard in the showrooms. Moans, crying, and disembodied voice saying, "I'm sorry," could be heard over and over again. Michael said it is kind of fit together of something happened back in the 1940s that led to ghosts being seen there. He notes that he's never seen a sighting of a ghost more than a recent time period. Every time he hears a story, the clothing of the ghost always matches the style of the 1940s. Another ghost from the period is known as Gus. He seems to act like a security guard in the main showroom. If his apparition is seen, he is wearing 1940s clothing and has been seen inspecting the crowd and keeping an eye on the stage before disappearing. Parapsychologist Barry Taft says that once you rule out all the logical explanations, such as a hoax, fraud, or other natural events, you are left with something that is totally unacceptable in terms of modern science. Modern science would have had a chance to explain what Blake was seeing that night. According to Blake, he and his coworker heard loud and sudden noises coming from the basement, so they headed in that direction. They noticed a padlock gate that led to the basement started bending out into the hallway, making a loud, cranking, metallic noise. It bent out and back several times. He says that as he was looking at it, he thought that something was like approaching the boundary of a physical possibility, that something could actually do that, bend a piece of metal that was padlocked together. It looked as if somebody was trapped and was trying to push on it and attempt to get out. One afternoon, Blake had another experience at the club. He says that while he was playing a game in a room near the kitchen, He felt the presence watching him. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a man which looked like he was dressed in a World War II brown leather bomb jacket. When he turned to talk to the man, he realized he could see right through him. The man then faded away right before his eyes. Later that same afternoon, the same ghost was seen on the third floor office. The witness says that the man was crouching in a corner, terrified. Again, he faded away right before his eyes. Lori says that most ghosts at the club are not dangerous at all. However, there is something in the basement that is described as very terrifying. She says that you'll have a hard time convincing people to go down there alone. It was a challenge tailor-made for the parapsychologist that actually went down there and did an investigation for Blake and Joey. One time and one time only, they braved an after-hours visit to the forbidden clutter of the ghost basement. While walking around, Blake and Joey were approached by a large, dark figure. It was about 7 feet tall and was floating in the corner of the room. Joey asked what it wanted, but there was no response. He said it had no features at all, and all it did was move around. At one point, it started to snake upwards and then backwards and then started just falling towards them. Blake said he did not like whatever it was, and apparently the feeling was mutual because just seconds later, the figure flew away. For sheer speed, Blake and Joey sprinted out of the basement and have never gone back. A funny thing happened to a comedian at the comedy store. When a ghost story begins like that, you are inclined to take it with a grain of salt. But what the witnesses and employees who have been have little to gain by telling these stories. And then if you guys watched the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they talk a little bit about it. And they had like a little investigation go on at the comedy store. And they had some interesting results. Keep in mind, it's a little dated what they were doing. But our old pal Zach actually was did an investigation there that you guys can check out as well. So the ghost of comedians, the comedy story.
Yeah.
Now I got some opinions, but I haven't heard you talk a little bit, so let's hear what you got to say.
Well, Bob, it's interesting. It's the same entity, it seems like, each time seen by a variety of folks here, which, you know, a lot of times maybe you don't get that. You don't get people saying the same thing. The same entity, right? Because we don't know exactly what it is, but the same one seen on a variation of times.
Yes.
Yeah.
I it's hard to say like what exactly is going on at the comedy store, because you have different spirits that are kicking around there that don't necessarily belong. Right. So at the comedy store, you have the different spirits that are dressed in the 1940s garb and are just kind of like there. And apparently the people were doing unsavory activities in the club when it was called the Cairo, and people died under that roof, and maybe that's why they're still trapped there. I don't think a whole lot what's going on there is intelligent hauntings. I think a lot of what they're dealing with is what we call residual hauntings. And if you want to hear the quick Bob After Dark difference between a residual and intelligent haunting, a residual haunting is kind of like a time-looped ghost. It's where the spirit does the same thing over and over again, probably at the same time every day. However, there does seem to have some evidence of some intelligent hauntings there is when the employee started calling out the spirit and got an ashtray thrown at him. Hold on one second.
Sure. Oh, go for it, Bob. Yes.
So a little intelligent haunting going on there that, you call it out and you got an ashtray thrown at you. You have to understand, we talked about this last week during the Eagles Club episode when we were looking at what spirits were still kicking around there and, you know, kind of explaining what I believe a ghost is. A comedy club, even when it was a nightclub, is going to leave a really big footprint. Laughter these days is a really big beacon of energy. You let that out, it's happiness. Things gravitate to happiness. Right?
Yeah.
Smiles are contagious, I think, is the correct terminology that people have used in the past. And if you have something like that going on, that's a lot of energy that something can definitely feed on down the line.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, if things are connected there too as well, as far as when we talk about things being, I always want to say like electrical stuff, but I mean, people are vibing to the place they feel at home the most, it seems like sometimes.
Yes, and it seems like whatever is kicking around here definitely liked their job at one point,
because
we didn't have the bouncers and the hecklers, the phantom hecklers.
Yeah, the phantom hecklers. What's worse than a regular heckler? A phantom heckler.
Yes. So I don't know, man. I would like to say that the Comedy Store gains nothing by telling these stories. It really doesn't. It's not like people will not go to the Comedy Store. People will go there based on, you know, the people that have performed there in the past or the people that were taught there in the past. And people will go there for shows, period. You don't need to tell a ghost story to drive people to an area.
Yeah.
And that's a big gripe of mine. And skeptics will say, well, you know, they're telling that story to gain attention and get popularity. The Comedy Store don't need that. So what are you accomplishing by telling these stories unless they might honestly be true and these are occurrences happening? Yeah. And it's happened to different employees over time, too. Look at the waitresses. Walk out of the room and all the tablecloths are folded up and you got chairs stacked. It's like, man, And that doesn't sound like it's malevolent. That thing just sounds like it's screwing with people. You know what I mean? Not in a bad way. It's just like, oh, ha-ha, now you got to do it again.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, you know, when you talk about the folks that kind of were in that building at the time, but the hecklers, spirits, you can't really stop them, can you? Regular heckler, human heckler, you can, but...
Well, you could definitely stop a human, or a phantom heckler.
Phantom hecker?
Tell them to
do they stop. Do they throw phantom tomatoes at you?
Oh, no, they just throw chairs and ashtrays at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Even worse.
Yes. Or they'll turn off the lights during your set.
Yeah, it could be worse.
Well, do you have any closing words for our audience tonight, Count Panic?
Bob, it makes me want to go to a comedy show right now and investigate. But I you did bring it up, too, before we close out here. You did bring it up. Some places, I was talking about this the other day with somebody. Some places, some venues, they'll embrace the fact that they have ghost stories.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's some places that say, well, you know what? We don't really like to talk about that. Let's
talk about
the historic aspect of it.
Yep.
We don't talk about the lean into the paranormal side of it. But I guess why not embrace it if you got it?
100%.
It's up to you, I guess.
Listen, if I live in a place that has things I can't explain wandering around there now, and I take pride in that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But do you have a quip?
Oh, the veil is thinning, and I guess
rapidly.
Very rapidly, and I guess stay tuned for the Bob After Dark.
Unwrapping my birthday present.
The unwrapping of the birthday present.
And then, folks, this should be edited and out by the time Saturday rolls around.
Yeah.
Panic and I are going to be at the Vampire Ball.
Vampire Ball.
The Vampire Ball at the Rock Bottom Brewery in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be there.
We'll be something.
It's going to be a good time.
So we don't know what it's going to entail. But,
no, we'll be there.
We'll be there.
We'll be there.
Come meet us.
If you're over the age of 21, you come out and
we'll
say
be out
hi.
There. We'll be out there.
Yeah. All right, Count Panic, thank you for being here again.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Thank you. Thank you for having. He's thinking about the Vampire Ball.
I'm thinking about the Vampire Ball. Yeah. All right, folks, thanks for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we want to say good night. And to my mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're safe, happy, and comfy. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.